This is KYUK Public Radio for the Yukon, Kuskokwim Delta. I'm Evan Erickson. The Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, has added dozens of communities to the list of those eligible for both individual and public federal disaster assistance following the October 2025 storm that caused widespread damage across western Alaska. The move makes homeowners and renters living in the following communities and their surrounding school districts eligible for individual federal assistance: Akiak, Akiachuk, Tuluksak, Chivak, and St. Mary's. Those same communities are now also eligible for FEMA public assistance for disaster-damaged public facilities. Additional communities eligible for public assistance include those within the Bering Strait School District, Pribilof School District, Iditarod Area School District, and Yukon-Koyukuk School District. Disaster assistance may include financial help with temporary lodging and home repairs, as well as other disaster-related expenses. To apply for FEMA individual assistance, head to disasterassistance.gov or call the agency's Alaska call center at 1-866-342-1699. In Bethel, Yupik translators are available at the AVCP Tukgar building to help people register in person from 10 a.m. to noon and 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. The deadline to apply for FEMA assistance is February 20th. The council that manages Alaska's federal fisheries may be just days away from a decision that could limit the amount of chum salmon that the Bering Sea trawl fleet is allowed to scoop up as bycatch. The move comes after years of calls for change from tribes who say they bear the brunt of conservation in the face of sustained salmon crashes. Here's a report. The North Pacific Fishery Management Council will weigh five options for dealing with chum salmon bycatch at its meeting in Anchorage this week. Tribal nonprofits and advocacy groups that represent a vast swath of western Alaska and western interior communities have mostly aligned around a combination of restrictions: a hard cap on all chum bycatch, a more severe hard cap where western Alaska chum are most prevalent, and strengthening the incentive-based regulations already used by the Pollock fleet. During advisory panel testimony ahead of the main council meeting, Caitlin Yeager with the At-Sea Processors Association, a trade group representing factory trawlers in the Pollock fleet, said that putting a cap on chum bycatch across the entire fishery could be catastrophic.
These hard caps are indiscriminate, triggering full shutdowns even when vessels are operating far outside of the times and areas where western Alaska chum are at risk.
The Pollock industry says severe chum restrictions would mean hundreds of millions of dollars in lost revenue. Leaders in the Pollock-dependent community of Unalaska also say a hard cap on chum bycatch would likely shut down the fishery early and bring serious economic consequences. Some western Alaska communities are also heavily invested in the Pollock industry through a long-running federal community development quota program, which channels profits into economic growth and education. The volume of chum bycatch recorded in the Pollock fishery has dropped significantly in recent years, but last year that number bumped up to a little more than 150,000 fish. Federal fisheries managers contend that roughly just 17% of those chums on average over the last decade were bound for western Alaska rivers. Yeager with the At-Sea Processors Association advocated for codifying current voluntary rules she says the Pollock fleet has already implemented. And she said the costs of more severe restrictions could outweigh the benefits for western Alaska chum.
And if you or the council select a hard cap approach, it must be transparent about the trade-offs involved and the limited biological benefit that they are expected to provide.
But tribal members from the state's hardest hit waterways, like Charlie Wright Sr. from the Upper Yukon River, told the panel that every salmon counts.
I'd just like to see some fish get back on the spawning ground, so future generations can enjoy it. I ain't trying to make money off of it. I just want to eat.
Wright is Athabascan and chairs the Fish Commission that advocates for dozens of Yukon River tribes now entering their seventh year of total salmon fishing closures.
And a lot of villages that don't have a store, they don't have boats and motors, there's no economy. So they're kind of pushed right back against the wall with no other means.
Crystal Lapp, a policy analyst with the Tanana Chiefs Conference, said salmon closures have caused measurable harm in the Yukon River communities her tribal consortium represents. She testified not only about the loss of subsistence, but also the loss of the river's commercial salmon fishery.
Over the last 6 years, closures have cost our region an estimated $27 million in direct income.
On the Kuskokwim River, where commercial fishing has also collapsed, there are still opportunities to harvest Chinook and chum. But Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission Chair Martin Andrew testified that severe restrictions have taken a toll.
There's no more commercial fishing income. We struggle to put food away for the winter and have enough to share in our limited subsistence opportunities. Our physical, mental, and spiritual health is in crisis.
Any decision by the council to tighten bycatch restrictions wouldn't likely go into place for at least a year, and the effects would take years to assess. But residents from communities along the Kuskokwim, in Norton Sound, and along the Yukon River looking for any means of putting salmon in their smokehouses say the clock is ticking. Those who knew and loved Marlene Johnson say she was in constant motion, either behind the scenes or on the forefront of the major issues that have shaped life for Alaskan natives for more than 60 years. The Tlingit leader died last week at the age of 90. KNBA's Rhonda McBride looks at her life and legacy.
Here is Marlene Johnson's recipe for leadership in her own words.
Alaska natives, I don't care where you're from, need to be involved. They need to sit on boards. They need to sit on commissions. They need to go to meetings. They need to be heard.
That was Johnson talking with the late Native journalist Nellie Moore in 2011 on the 40th anniversary of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. Today, ANCSA remains the largest land claim settlement in the nation's history, one that Johnson helped to steer through Congress.
The Alaska Native perspective needs to be heard, and they need to know that we aren't sitting back there on a stump doing nothing, that we are, just like everybody else. We have a brain and we use it. We have muscles and we use it. And we have respect for each other, and we don't call other people names like they sometimes call us.
The 1960s was a tough time to be an Alaska Native and a woman.
The men had the voice. They were out front, but somehow Marlene became a voice among all those men. I often wondered, how did she do it?
Back then, Irene Rowan had a front row seat in Washington, D.C. She worked for the federal government and became part of an ANCSA support group called Alaskans on the Potomac.
She was royalty. People looked up to her. She was rich. She was rich with knowledge and with enthusiasm.
Rosita Worrell says Marlene Johnson was one of a kind.
She exemplified what we know and recognize as a leader. And they don't come along very often.
Worrell, who is president of Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, says Johnson had a leadership style all her own. Someone always ready to listen, even if she didn't agree.
And I don't think people thought of her as a woman or a man. They just admired her leadership capabilities.
Johnson's granddaughter, Vera Starbard, says this was an amazing accomplishment for a woman who navigated times that were far from being gender and color blind.
She always insisted on being taken seriously, but at the same time, she had to figure out how to maneuver in that world, let her voice be heard when literally some people would not hear it.
Starbard says people forget that Johnson was a single mom who not only raised six kids, but was also a businesswoman. She co-owned a regional air taxi service in her home village of Hoonah and became one of the first women to chair a Native corporation, a job she held on Sea Alaska's board for a decade. She also helped to found many of the educational organizations and nonprofits that make up today's social service safety net.
People don't realize how different Alaska would be without her. Certainly Alaska Native lives.
Without ANCSA, we would be back where we were in the early 60s, where discrimination would still be here. I'm a firm believer of that.
In a 2009 interview with researcher Dr. Thomas Thornton, Johnson said Native corporations, with their wealth and resources, helped to change the way Alaska Natives were treated. She recalled her days when her family moved to Juneau in the late 1940s so she could go to high school. Johnson said she and her girlfriends would go out late at night on a mission.
I shouldn't confess doing anything wrong in my life. But a few of us that were considered breeds
would go down the street and rip the signs off of the bars, and there's bars all the way up and down South Franklin Street that aren't there now, that said, no Coasties, no Indians, or no dogs allowed.
But somewhere along the line, she made the transition from activist to diplomat. Emil Nadi, the first president of the Alaska Federation of Natives, said that she was pivotal in the land claims fight.
It was just part of that age, chauvinism. But she stood on her own, her qualifications. She wasn't put there because she was a woman. She was put there because she was an effective advocate.
Nadi visited Johnson not long before she died. And when he realized her time was nearing its end, he felt a wave of loneliness because there are only about a dozen people, he says, who really know the story of ANCSA.
There are 500 stories. Everybody who was involved has a story. You look at the same event, see it different. So you get all kinds of stories, but in there somewhere is what really happened.
Now, there is one less member in that land claims band of warriors. But Rosita Worrell says Johnson will always be remembered.
The night before she left us, we had just spectacular northern lights. That said to me, those are our warriors ready to embrace this leader in the spirit world.
In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
This is KYUK News. I'm Evan Erickson. Koyana for listening. Please share your news tips, comments, or suggestions. You can email us at news@kyuk.org or message us on Facebook. And stay tuned for Yoktun Ganumchit coming up.